Hey, is this Mark?
Yeah, this is Mark.
Super. Man, this is working out. I got two phones going here, one recording and one on speakerphone. So I think
okay. It
looks like we're getting, I'm doing a kind of a test phase here, so I see the waveforms, and this looks pretty good. Well, how's your day going?
My day is good.
Cool.
Got good weather here.
Super. It's really pretty here as well. Are you in Washington also?
No, I'm actually in the Capital District of New York, so like the Albany area.
Oh, okay. And so you and your brother are on different sides of the country and you work together on the project?
Yes.
Okay.
My brother actually is moving. He's actually in Washington State right now, but he's moving actually about a month ago. He started his move from the Florida Keys to Washington State, so he's kind of still on the road settling in. So he told me to go ahead and answer any questions you got.
Sure. Well, I appreciate you taking a minute for me. But you know, some of my questions, I guess, are kind of deeper. And I'll say I'm not a professional interviewer. I'm not a professional journalist. The way I see it is, I'm a comedian and public intellectual, and I'm trying to dig down into some issues that I cannot get anyone else to talk with me about.
And sure.
So I thought, I saw the things you posted. I saw some of the flyers you had up. I heard about your organization from a flyer that was posted at a Safeway.
Yeah.
And I saw what you guys were about, and that sparked some questions with me, and I thought you guys might be somebody I'd want to interview. And, you know, my channel is fledgling. I don't claim to be, you know, famous or have any following whatsoever, but I'm following, like, for me, what is the truth and the important questions that I think people should be asking.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, I know, I know you're going to make me think about my beliefs and stuff that, you know, I already think and question, and I just hope that you'd have an open mind for the stuff I've got to say.
Sure.
All right, cool. Well, so the APLEA Rangers, what does APLA stand for?
Well, APLEA stands for American Private Law Enforcement Association. And we basically came up with that idea like in late 2002, early 2003, kind of in direct response to 9/11.
Okay.
And so we basically, both of us were in the military at the time. My brother was Army Infantry and I was the Air Force. And we basically, we were listening to a lot of the stuff that happened. Obviously, September 11th was kind of rocked the whole world, but especially, you know, for people that live in New York State, it was at home. And basically, during George Washington Bush, or I'm sorry, George W. Bush say, you know, Homeland Security is everybody's responsibility. So we started, you know, at the time I was teaching martial arts and, he was in the military and I was in the military, so we're like, you know what, this is what it's all about. This is what we need to do. We need to train people to kind of be ready to be watching out for the bad guys kind of thing. So that's kind of what the beginning of it was. So the APLEA Rangers is actually kind of an evolution of APLEA, which is this past year we came up with that idea to offer a way for people to become involved free. You know, I teach martial arts and I charge for that service like a regular martial arts school. We do Krav Maga, which is Israeli-based, and we also do tactical training and stuff like that. But we wanted the Rangers to be something that we could give away for free, so what we came up with is a code of ethics that if people agree to the code of ethics, they can become a part of it. And then this way, there's no mandatory training or mandatory dues or anything like that. They just pretty much can become plugged in wherever they want to be plugged in.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
How many states are you guys in right now?
It's hard to say. We put up a Facebook page, and then like in less than a year, we got over 5,000 members.
Yeah.
And they're all, you know, all different states. My brother's been doing a lot. Well, we've traveled as a company, and he's just traveled as part of the way he just lives. So, you know, he's been putting flyers everywhere he goes. And I would say we're in most states. We have at least one or two representatives.
Okay.
But the thing that's different about us is we don't have it like, all right, this is your New York contact person, this is your New Jersey contact person. It's pretty much a very loose organization because we really are, we're not trying to have an organization where you have to report to so-and-so. We want to attract more high-level individuals and train people so that, you know, like I've been in the military for almost, for about 13 years, and if I join, like, I know you were asking about militia groups, like, a lot of these militia groups are run by guys who never served, and they've never had a... So, now all of a sudden, because somebody joined before me, I might have to report to him, and I might have to, you know, you need to show up for mandatory training and such, we're kicking you out of the group. So we when we started this, this was actually kind of a little bit before the whole militia craze happened.
Okay.
I would say that kind of has become more popular in the last 8 to 10 years. And we were even before that, and right away as formed in New York State, we knew that we didn't want to create something that would be considered antagonistic to the government. You know what I mean? We wanted to stand alongside law enforcement, stand alongside the military, and help.
So, yeah, I see. And that it's natural progression, and I can see how there would be... Well, there's a lot of militias out there, and I can only imagine what this conversation would be like with different ones, but your values then are pretty clear. The word ranger has always been somewhat confusing to me. I'm curious what your take on it is. Like, I played Dungeons & Dragons, I've been a ranger character, you know, as the ranger in, the king is a ranger in Lord of the Rings or whatever, but there's also rangers in the military, you know, like the airborne rangers, whatever. What does the word ranger mean to you?
So that was an interesting word, because first of all, you have the original Rogers Rangers in America.
Okay.
We're kind of a pre-America group of guys that actually were trained, and they actually got involved in conflict, and, you know, they were part of the founding of America, was Rogers Rangers. So all the guys who become Army Rangers study the manual, they call the Rangers Manual, which is all about Rogers Rangers and all his things that he made his guys do. And it's kind of like guerrilla warfare tactics, and, you know, about carrying a tomahawk and different things that you had to do as a ranger. But the word ranger, to me, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan myself, and the idea of a ranger is somebody who protects the land. And so... we wanted to use that name as something that, you know, we care about what's going on in America. We want to safeguard America. We're not saying we're Army Rangers. We're saying we care about the land, and we want to make sure it stays the way. We want to make sure it stays land of the free, home of the brave.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. All right, you see here how amateur of a of an interviewer I am. I'm listening to your answer, and I'm like, I totally forget what, you know, my train of thought, what I'm gonna answer.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
But I can totally get on board with that. You know, protecting the land in general, and that, you know, actually Ty would, you know, at least.
We do attract a lot. We have a lot of guys in our organization that are involved, that were Army Rangers, that were Special Forces units that have done operational stuff that is very high speed, high level stuff, you know. But as well as just regular guys, we have guys that are just in the military or the National Guard, but also guys that were never in the military, but they just feel the same. They what holds us all together is our code of ethics, basically.
Okay.
So
that's new information for me about Rogers Rangers. I'll look that up as well, and I'll, you know, get a little history lesson there as well. I'm just going down my list of questions here that I thought up, you know, a couple of days ago, like what I wanted to ask you about. Do the APLA Rangers have connections to any other organizations, like direct ties, and then like either law enforcement, other military organizations, like
To answer your question, I was in law enforcement when I first joined the Air Force. I was involved in what's called services, which is a non-law enforcement job description, and then I switched. After 9/11, I really wanted to get into the law enforcement side of things, and that's what I ended up doing. For the next 7 years, I was a peace officer with New York State on the military base, and I also cross-trained into the military police program. So I went to military police school, and So law enforcement, you know, the whole idea of law enforcement, like, you know, people that break the law, the word private law enforcement is something that, you know, private investigators, security, public law enforcement is typically government funded. Private law enforcement is typically the private sector, which could even include civilians. It even could include volunteers. So that's why we use the term private law enforcement. But yeah, I do have experience in law enforcement, and also another organization that we, do a lot of training under is called CT-707, Counterterrorism 707. It's a Israeli-based counterterror program, and the head of that organization is Command Sergeant Major Nir Mamad. So, and he's my Krav Maga instructor. He's also a tactical instructor. He was like a a commander in Israeli special forces, as well as on hostage rescue teams and nuclear SWAT teams. So, yeah, we do a lot of training. That's another thing that kind of separates us from some of the other militias. We're not opposed to militias, and we're not even considering ourselves a militia necessarily, but one of the things that separates us, a lot of these people that join militia groups want everything for free, and, you know, you don't get good training like that for free. So, you know, we have members that have, unless you're in the special forces unit, but if you're outside in the private sector, you have to pay a lot of times big money to go to trainings like this and have background checks and all that stuff. So
I see. So let me just get that right. So this other organization that you work with is G2707, is that right?
It's C, like Charlie Tango, GT707. It's the unit identifier for the Israeli Special Forces that the other man was involved with while he was in Israel. He became Galani, and again, he could talk to you more about his background, but if you go to CT707.com,
okay,
that also kind of gives a bio about him. And okay, we train with him on a regular basis. In fact, we were in May. We were with him in Michigan, and we recorded his whole training that he did. And we're actually in the process of producing those videos that he did with the SWAT team there on how to do Israeli room clearing.
I see.
They call it the method in Israel, but it's a little bit different than our American SWAT method of how you clear rooms.
I see. So that's, I guess, it gets kind of to some of the questions that I have that I'm really curious about, and it gets to some of my deeper concerns as an American citizen. You know, I had some general or more general questions or whatever, but since you brought up the Israeli thing, I did notice that is, like, you know, in your list of your code of ethics, the, you know, we stand with Israel is like number two. Like, it ranks pretty high up there.
Sure.
And and I guess that makes sense because you do have a tie to actual Israeli trainers, and that's how some of your. But are there any financial ties as well? Does this organization provide
financial? I mean, not really. I mean, we're not really funded. We're privately funded, so we're not really. There's no government entity that's actually keeping us running. It's just private citizens. But the one reason we are really important about standing with Israel is because if you go, you know, obviously, 9/11, America became aware of the fact that we had a fight on our hands, that there's people that hated us from other countries. Prior to 9/11, most Americans, especially in the military, you talk to, they said, you know what, we'll never be attacked on our own soil. It's not going to happen. Our military is too great. We have too much. Our tactics are too strong. Our weapons are too big. After 9/11, it was a paradigm shift for everybody in those units, the FBI, the CIA, all these different units. Organizations are like, oh my gosh, how do we miss this? And again, George W. Bush was like, you know, well, one of the reasons, one of the problems was we weren't communicating across agencies. Israel, ever since it became a nation, it's now almost 70 years old, and ever since it became a nation, has been fighting terrorism, and it still to this day fights terrorism. So I knew when 9/11 happened, and my brother knew, that we should search out Israeli trainers for the fact that they've been already in this fight. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that's why it's really important to us, because we believe that they are the experts at this stuff. You know, and in fact, a lot of the things that Command Sergeant Major Nairman Mann is teaching is completely opposite to what these people are being taught in their agencies, in their basic training, in their SWAT training, and there's a big difference. You know, a lot of times we just do things because that's how we've always done it. And sometimes, like, for example, if you watch movies, prior to 9/11, bad guys attack a bunch of airplanes, and there's always a talk about, oh my gosh, if you just do everything we say and you give us all these demands, we'll land the plane safely and everybody's alive. After 9/11, all of a sudden everything shifted. We realized that there was people that were willing to die for the cause they believed in, and it is a different type of fight. We have to train differently for it.
I see. This really gets right to the heart of some issues that I'm having. I'm having difficulty finding a place in our society to even have the conversation about the questions that I have. And you and I see things really differently. And this is exactly what I'm trying to get to the bottom of. So please don't take it like I'm coming at you. But I'm going to ask some critical questions based upon my view of history and what 9/11 is. So when 9/11 happened, you know, I was in Missouri at the time. Anybody in New York, of course, is going to have a much different, you know, it's going to, everybody who I knew was in New York has this real trauma associated with it, where I was just watching it on CNN, right? And on the day of, I had a bunch of questions, you know, like, wait, why did that, who did this and why? And I just kind of went along with whatever CNN said. And for a long time, you know, to like 2010, maybe. And then some friends and some things I found online regarding, you know, the events of the day of 9/11 and leading up to it made me profoundly question the Osama bin Laden story and the official story of 9/11. And some people I've talked with are completely incapable of considering any alternative to that. But some of the information that I found, unfortunately, points to, for instance, like you said a minute ago, that, you know, that when 9/11 happened, it became clear that to some people that the agencies weren't talking with each other, and that's how, you know, 9/11 hijackers got in, that's how they got on the planes, whatever. But my research really points to exactly the opposite, that that Abel Danger knew that those hijackers were in the country already. J. Michael Springman, this guy in Saudi Arabia, says that, you know, people like the hijackers were able to get into the country on CIA visas. The people, the security agencies that operated at all four of the airports where the all three of the airports where the hijackers got on the planes were all the same security company. And that security company is an Israeli security company that's really famous. You know, the actual World Trade Center itself was owned by Larry Silverstein and bought like 2 months before. And he's an Israeli Zionist. And the way that the towers fell is not consistent to me with just these planes hitting the towers. It seems to me that there was a controlled demolition there. You know, for instance, so these are like, I am personally concerned. My research has turned up that the Israeli Mossad and some rogue factions inside the United States government are the ones responsible, and not Osama bin Laden. Have you heard these ideas before?
Yeah, I have. I mean, there's always conspiracies. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you have guys that say we never landed on the moon and that the whole space program is not legit. You know what I mean?
They're out there, yeah. I'm not one of those people. I wouldn't be,
I have good friends of mine that believe that. You know what I mean? And I've had conversations, in fact, even this past year with one of my tenants. I do some real estate on the side. And this tenant is from Afghanistan. And he's actually here, you know, kind of like a work welfare to work program or something like that, and basically told me that, you know, 9/11 was just a big thing that the Americans started to start a war on Islam. So, you know, and so there's both sides to it. I don't agree with that side. I mean, I do believe that, like, you know, I do know that there's a lot of things that happen that are above my pay grade, as we say in the military. So, you know, I also can tell you that I went through basic training in August of 2000, and in August of 2000 we were in that was when the USS Cole was bombed, and they brought us. I mean, basic training is probably about the lowest security clearance you can have, because you got all these brand new recruits in the military that really have no experience, no training. It's just the basics. You're not really learning anything except for marching and stuff. But we had one day where we had a. They brought us into a tent, and they sat us all in front of a video, and they started talking about how terrorism is a threat to America, blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, they said, this is the number one guy that we're on the lookout for, number one bad guy that we're looking for, and that was Osama bin Laden. That was a year before 9/11 that happened. So, was there people in the government that knew that Osama bin Laden was a problem? Yes. Did we know terrorism was a problem? The problem is that we don't know. There's threats all the time, but we don't know what's a credible threat. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know if it's going to actually happen or not happen. And not everything that gets put out on the news is what's actually happened. And unfortunately, because if we did that, then all of our enemies would just watch the news and know exactly what our next move was. you know what I mean? Yeah. All I can tell you from my side of the thing is that the day of 9/11, I got a phone call from my unit, and they said, listen, we're going to war. You need to get all your stuff and get here to base. And so I did, and our base was locked down, and the very next morning, we were flying out to New York City area, and I was feeding people. I was feeding FBI agents, state troopers, people that were basically digging through the rubble. I don't believe that we live in a country. This is where it comes back to, like, do I believe that we live in a country that is so dark and so evil that we would actually kill 3,000 citizens, non-combatants, to start a war on Muslims? I don't think so. That's just my opinion, but it's an opinion. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I agree with you that our country isn't one, but I do also know, like, I don't know where you come down on JFK, but I believe that JFK was killed by the CIA and Lyndon Johnson, like, teamed up. And I also believe that in 1980, the October surprise really happened, that, as in, the Republican Party actually allowed hostages to be held longer than they would have been held otherwise, just so they could win an election. I live in that world, you know, also the one where the CIA overthrew Iran in the 1950s that caused a lot of these problems that we're facing today with Iran or whatever. And why, I don't think, like, here's a true or false question. On 9/11, were there any military drills being conducted that interfered with the actual military response to the hijackings?
Meaning, give me more information about your question. Like, you mean, like, was our military being prepped for this attack? Is that what you're asking?
There were, if you look into the accounts of the actual, for instance, the flight air traffic controllers on 9/11, right? They all talk about that there were these military drills that were being run by NORAD at the same time of the hijackings that really delayed the response and ability to actually respond in real time. The same thing with the fighter response, that there were these other drills. Some people have found evidence
of,
like...
It's very possible. I can't answer true or false because I honestly don't know. I mean, that's, you probably know more about that than me.
So I'm not suggesting that the United States Army, like from the top down, and the whole Pentagon was like, we're gonna have this attack happen. I'm suggesting that there actually is a small enough element inside, like the Dick Cheney type people, you know, that as well as, I mean, inside of our government, this, you know, the American Israel Political Action Committee, like there is really inside of our actual Washington D.C. and military establishment a large tie with Israel, and my research points points to this this alliance as being the actual cause of 9/11, which gives me, if I could bring it back to the original question about militias and stuff like that, and what militias and rangers really are, as far as we're protecting the land, and we're a militia, which means we're protecting the people in our neighborhood that are around us. It's concerning and alarming to me to have these type of alliances to a country on the other side of the world that has repeatedly shown that it's going to spy on us, that, you know, there's the whole USS Liberty thing, that and also manipulates our political system and our culture, as far as a lot of these people own media companies, and do you see where my concern is coming from here, if I'm talking to somebody?
No, I understand what you're saying. All I can say is that we went to World War II as a nation because Israel was under attack by Nazis, and even to this day, people say, you know what, we didn't kill that many. You know, the Nazis really weren't that bad. There's people out there that are marching, and they live in America, and they believe that Israel is the biggest problem. And, you know, obviously they're not the biggest problem if they're the ones being ushered into the oven during World War II. And America was late to respond, and the reason why was because we were like, no, it can't be that bad. You know what I mean? So when we joined the war effort in World War II, it was so late in the game that Britain was almost wiped off the map.
Right.
You know, and so personally, I believe that, you know, that's why it's kind of an important thing for us to say we stand with Israel, but I'm definitely an American, I love America, and, you know, I've served in the military over 13 years, my brother served several years, he was actually injured in Baghdad, and medevaced out of Iraq, and so, the guys that I'm meeting, see, I don't really watch the news, I mean, I'm really, let me be honest, when I watch the news, I watch the news with a critical eye, just like yourself. I don't believe everything I'm hearing, but when I talk to the people who are actually in the conflicts, they're actually there. Those are the people that I feel are more of a credible witness because they're actually there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And one of the things about 9/11 is, you know, I don't know, was it a big conspiracy? I don't think so. I definitely know that a lot of innocent people died. I definitely know that there's been continuous attacks on America. There's a lot of, that I don't believe that any religion that believes that it should kill people because the religion tells it to kill people is good. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who are Muslim that don't believe that. You know, I have a lot of friends from other religions, Buddhists and, you know, other religions that don't even, you know what I mean? Like, And people always point back to, well, what about the Crusades? Well, if I was around during the Crusades, I wouldn't align myself with those guys either. You know what I mean? Yeah. So my thought is, militia is very American in the sense of, like, every man is responsible to take care of his wife and his children in the event that a bear attacks his home, you know, wild barbarians attack the home, whatever it is, a storm comes and hits the house, you know what I mean? So that's our motto, our slogan is equip the leaders to defend freedom. And our basic premise is not that, hey, we know everything, but I want to learn enough so that I can effectively take care of my wife and children. And maybe even if I train even a little bit more, I can help the community around me. That's all of what we believe as far as militia. You know what I mean? Like the idea, I know, where'd you say you live in?
Right now, I'm homeless in Washington.
Oh, you're in Washington. That's right. But, like, I don't know how your police response rate is there, but the whole leave it to the professionals thing, I know when a crime goes down, a lot of times I used to bounce at a bar till like 4:30 in the morning.
Right.
We close at 4, and all the fights happen between 2 and 4.
Right.
And I'd be the only bouncer, and I'd be calling the police saying, hey, there's 15 guys fighting in the street. And they're like, literally a police department. It's one block around the corner, and it takes them 20 minutes to respond.
Right.
Now, I think that's too long in a fight. Like Mike Tyson says, the thing about the late response to 9/11.
Until you get punched,
I'm sorry, am I talking too much?
No. I've heard that Mike Tyson quote as well. Yeah, until you get the first punch.
Yeah, like everyone's
got
a plan so you can punch in the face, right? Mm. And the thing is, like, 9/11 was a punch in the face to America. Now, whoever was behind it, you know, I don't believe it was Israel, because Israel, as you said, is one of Israel's greatest allies. He supplied them with all their weapons. He supplied them with all the stuff that they got now, that which makes their army the way it is. We backed them in World War II. But I believe that there's a lot of people that hate us in America because we have money, we have opportunities, we have wealth compared to them. I mean, have you traveled to any other countries before?
Of course, yeah. I've been to Europe. I was in China.
Okay.
I've seen some other stuff, but I mean, our country compared to, you know, most of South America and Africa, right? They have a lot of reasons to see us as the city on the hill. And
absolutely.
However, I guess I have to. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could grab onto there from what you were saying, but my read on, I know it's possible. That's what I'm really trying to avoid, is that by having a discussion where you question the intentions of Israel and their military, and what they're doing to Palestine and the relationship with the United States, there's a tendency, and I think I see that this is a propaganda, like a propaganda move on a lot of people's part, is to make it so you can't criticize Israel whatsoever, or you're immediately in the KKK. And that,
right,
I see as really manipulative, and I have to really call question with. Because as an American, it's my goal to think about every relationship with every country. Like, if I was going to start a militia and I was going to have a tie to Singapore, you know, I would expect you to be sitting here saying, so why do we want Singaporeans coming in here? Like, we're going to have an emergency response to Hurricane Harvey, and Singapore is going to be the one that's going to, you know, see what I'm saying? Like, it seems really strange for any militia to have, like, a big tie to an organization outside the country for any reason. And then you throw in Israel in there, and I have to call question with, first of all, I guess your history of World War II, if you actually study what the Israeli state was doing, the people who were in Israel at the time, the Israeli Zionists, they were actually sabotaging British equipment at the time. The actual Israelis in Israel who were trying to create their Zionist state were actually on the side of the Nazis. They weren't trying to save the Jews in Israel. Look that up. Put that to the test. And then between World War II and... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
And then between World War II and now, there's been several instances, like, you know, Pollock, you know, these spies that they have, they stole the nuclear secrets. They won't even reveal what kind of weapons they have to the world. Like, they have these nuclear weapons, they get keep secret and have a totally different standard for their nuclear weapons. Then there's the USS Liberty. They want to invade, like, they wanted to have a, do something in the war with the Islamic people around them, and they actually bombed a United States ship, just so we wouldn't be able to interfere and spy on their communications. So look up the USS, Liberty. Something I didn't even know about until I was nearly 40 years old. No one ever told me this history. And all these things, and then if I look at, you know, like, what's going on in our culture right now, And if you look at what's going on in Washington, like personally, I am personally trying to boycott the Israeli state so they treat the Palestinians like human beings. Because it appears to me as if they've created themselves their own concentration camp for the Palestinians, and we're not allowed to criticize that, or we're, you know, Nazis because we're not sympathetic to their Holocaust. Do you see how twisted that is?
Well, no, I agree. Just because you live in a country doesn't make you a good guy. I mean, Americans are very guilty of that, too. Like, well, I'm American. I'm on the good guy side. But you know what? There's criminals. There's people that do bad things, all the way from bad doctors and bad lawyers and bad politicians all the time. You know what I mean? So just because you're a part of a specific nation doesn't make your moral compass good or bad. Everybody needs, you know what I mean? And actually, back in 2002, I was teaching Kung Fu at the time. I wasn't teaching Krav Maga. And I had a student who was a Muslim, and he was, like, hardcore, militant Muslim. He actually became Muslim in prison. And we would have great discussions at the end of every class about, you know, Christianity versus Islam and stuff like that. And, I mean, I enjoyed talking to him. We had a lot of things in common. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, well, you're a Muslim, I'm not going to teach you, or you're a bad guy because you're a Muslim. You know what I mean? He was just a person, and I was a person, and we had intellectual conversation.
I guess...
When I was in Israel, I just went to Israel, like, 2 months ago with my brother, and we brought a camera crew there, and we recorded a training, and then I went into the old city, into Jerusalem, and I had a lot of stimulating conversations with Israeli as well as Palestinians about what's going on, what the state of the union is there. There's a lot of upset Palestinians of the fact that, you know, I talked to a lot of cab drivers that were like, you know what, because of these checkpoints, we have to drive 2 hours around to get to where we want to go.
Well, I mean, there's children in jail. There's people, like 500 people in jail, in prison without charge. They only have power for 2 hours a day. There's food shortages. They make it really easy. For whatever reason, you can get these, like, sleepy drugs all the time, you know, but you can't get other types of goods. Like, the living in Palestine, if you actually listen to what any actual Palestinian reports out of there, and it's difficult as an American to get that type of news. It's really, the Israelis are bullying those people and tyrannizing them. And so I cannot, as a human being, be silent while that happens to somebody else. And then in my country, it's unheard of. And if I bring it up, then I'm on the side of the Islamic terrorists or something like this. So I have to call question with this entire framework, which appears to me to be based on propaganda, coming from a bunch of companies that have a lot of ties to Israel. So we're already half an hour. This has been really great. Thanks so much for engaging me.
Oh, no worries.
Maybe we can talk again sometime, and we could, you know, if you were looking into some stuff, I'll look into some stuff. But here's my concern, is it's not just that, a couple of things happened on 9/11, whatever, but our country, because of its centralized nature in Washington, D.C., and the ease of which people get bribed there, and all these cultural ties, there's a chance that the United States could become like a tribute nation to Israel, that they could like influence us in Washington, D.C. so much that people in Tel Aviv are represented better than people in the United States, and that our foreign policy then just becomes an outworking of what Israel's plans are, which are for territorial expansion, as they've continually been showing, like their territory is expanding. And that would mean that American farm boys are getting sent to Iraq and Afghanistan and potentially Iran and all over the region, you know, getting blown up, not for American interests, but Israeli interests primarily, and then secondarily, people who sell guns and people who sell oil and natural resources. And you see how sad that is to me to hear about these people dying and getting wounded, like your brother, and, you know, if that's not in America's best interest, then who is it for? Are they just mercenaries that are being hired out to help Israel expand its borders, and then...
Well, I would definitely encourage you to talk to my instructor, Nir Mann. He could definitely speak on behalf of Israel and Israel's history. He's a lot more well-read than I am. Obviously, he's Israeli himself, so he'd love to do an interview with you.
Do you think he would talk with me?
What?
You think he would talk with me?
I mean, I would reach out to him the same way you reach out to me and see if he would. You know what I mean?
How do you spell
his name? Nir is his first name, and his last name is Mamman. His website is CT707.
CT707, and then I can...
Yeah, and he was there on the West Bank in 2009, and he you know, fluent. He can speak fluent Hebrew, and I'm sure he speaks, I think he speaks Arabic a little bit too, because he was dealing with Border Patrol.
For me, in my perspective, that's like, you know, going to the horse's mouth, and I'm ready to do it if he'll speak with me. I'd be surprised if he would, but, I mean, I don't know, not that surprised, but it would be an interesting conversation with me, and I would totally...
There's bad people in every country, and hate doesn't win fights, in my opinion. Hate starts wars, hate doesn't win wars, you know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
And we gotta be open-minded enough to see that there's good in everybody, and just because they're from a certain country or a certain religion doesn't make them a bad or a good person. We kind of got... judge everybody on a basis of individuality, in my opinion.
I hope it doesn't come... I hope I'm really trying not to come across like I have some kind of... I never want to be like this person that I have some, you know, hatred for a whole class of people, or I don't have anything to learn from somebody, or conceited in my position. I'm really trying to...
Oh, you're doing good, man. It's all good. I appreciate the conversation, and you have some questions that I don't... You know, it's going to make me have to look back and find some answers to. All I can talk about is what I already know. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. Well, you know, you've been really open-minded. You've heard everything I had to say. You've got my concerns about, you know, militia having connections to, you know, countries on the other side of the world. You got my concerns about 9/11 and the Israeli history. You can look it up in yourself. I'd love to hear what you find. And, you know, I've heard a lot about your organization, what means a lot to you guys. So I would, I'd be able to take what I've got right now and post it, and sleep on what I've learned and look forward to another interview in the future, maybe.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right, I'm going to sign off here. This is J. Michael Hudson doing, my show is called Surgeon, Not the Butcher, where I'm trying to be the surgeon, not the butcher, right? To get, so I'm not, sloppy with my ideas. I'm trying to precisely find the cause of the issues. And this has been Mark Misery with the Appalachian Rangers.
Yeah, definitely send me a link, and I'll make sure I share it around, too, and we'll get more hits on it.
All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot. You have a great day. Appreciate your time.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.